This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're with Ayman and Chuck on the Evening Edition, and now we are going to move on to our next story, and this is about bike hailing services and how to make them safer. This is after the Youth and Sports Minister Syed Saddiq Syed Abdul Rahman officiated the Dago Ride Management Office in Kuala Lumpur yesterday.
Yep, so Dago Ride has started operations actually in November 2016, but then they were declared illegal in January 2017 by the previous government due to safety concerns for the motorcyclists and pillion riders. And this was maintained under the new government with Anthony Lok as well, saying in 2018 that they will never legalize Dago Ride in Malaysia and there are too many accidents involving bikes that they just can't take the risk.
But obviously they've changed their minds now because, you know, they're bringing back Dago Ride, they're encouraging Gojek to come into Malaysia as well. So throughout this whole conversation, before this, like months before, the economic benefits of encouraging motorbike e-hailing services have been touted. Things like creating job opportunities, alleviating the burden of low-income households, for example. But now that this is actually happening, there is still the big question about what measures are being put in place to ensure the safety of riders and the passengers as well. So earlier today, Danya Nair from the news team spoke with Nabil Faisal, who is the founder of Dago Ride. And one of the things they spoke about was safety.
There's a lot of riders who are concerned about safety as well because they also provide rides to their loved ones. So we only provide the service with people that we know can provide the best form of safety and security for our customers. So we provide helmets. We also provide insurance. We also are providing things like hairnets and masks for the passengers. I mean, the reality is we can do as much as we want, but reality is reality and we cannot control everything, but we try to control as much as we can possible.
Yeah, and it sounds like they have tried to put some measures in, right? What was it now? Hairnets, masks, they provide insurance, they provide helmets as well. So I think that can help in terms of, ensuring that the pillion riders are safe as well as the riders as well.
Do you ride a motorcycle or...?
No, I'm terrified of riding a motorcycle because you're like so exposed, right? The cars are driving really fast next to you, and I'm definitely not the target audience of this service.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand where Anthony Lok is coming from. Like, you know, in a car you have a fender bender, in a motorcycle that's a trip to the hospital. You know, because there's no protection around you and that kind of thing. And also I occasionally ride a motorcycle, you know, like sometimes when I go to like Thailand I'll just rent a motorcycle and drive around. It's actually you do feel a little bit exposed. And I have actually had incidents where I think I was taking a picture of the sunset. So I was asking my girlfriend to take a picture of the sunset and I got distracted and I actually hit the curb and we actually had a very minor accident.
Oh.
But we ended up with scratches and all that kind of thing. So I can understand, you know, there is definitely a higher risk factor here when it comes to motorcycles. There's no denying that.
Yeah, and I think there have been other suggestions as well, like providing, what do you call it, like luminous vests, like things that you can see from far away and at night as well. And I think that can help too. But I do believe that in addition to these small kinds of measures that they provide, we still need better motorcycling lanes. This has been an issue that's been going on. Of course, it requires a lot of expenditure in terms of infrastructure, but it is definitely needed, especially in the busy town areas, city areas. Because a few months ago, we did do a story where in the Federal Highway, I believe, there were potholes in the motorcycling lanes.
Yep.
That is extremely dangerous for drivers. So we need to upgrade the infrastructure to complement the kind of measures that will be put in place by the bike hailing services as well.
Yeah, I remember that video. So basically, it was a guy with a GoPro attached to the front of his bike, and he went down all the way on the Federal Highway motorcycle lane, and there were potholes, there were diversions, there were puddles. You know, it was like a Super Mario kind of like obstacle course or something, you know.
So We're going to come back after the break to speak with Keshi Dillon, founder of BikesRepublic.com. In the meantime, if you have any thoughts on this, on how to make bike hailing services safer, you can call us at 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. Stay tuned on the evening edition, BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's Ayman and Chuck on the evening edition, and we are talking about bike hailing services and how we can ensure the safety of riders and passengers. This is after the Daegu Ride has come back in operation after 3 years of being made illegal due to safety concerns. So to take us through the safety aspects of bike hailing services, we have on the line Keshi Dillon, founder of BikesRepublic.com, Malaysia's premier motorcycle website. Good evening, Keshi. Thank you for joining us.
Hey, good evening. Thank you for having me. And looking forward to talking about this.
Okay, so first of all, there have been numerous concerns about safety because, correct me if I'm wrong, being passenger on a bike is quite different from being a passenger at the back of a MyV.
Of course. Galaxies apart, actually. Safety is, of course, of paramount. It's the most basic thing when you're on a motorcycle, right? It's great that they're providing helmets and such, but I must point out to say that helmets come in different sizes, come in different forms. Mm. And so by saying that they're providing helmets, I think it's a very right off the top kind of a solution. No two people have the same size of a head. So what happens when the helmet doesn't fit, or if the helmet is too big, and if you have a fall and the helmet is too big, it's going to be the first thing that rolls off your head. So a right fitting helmet is one of the most important things, actually, I believe.
Right. Okay. I need to ask a rather personal question now. Keshi, sure. you and I have. I mean, you know me. We met me before, right? So
yeah,
I'm not what you would call small. Okay, so
no, I wouldn't say that. Yeah.
So for the people who haven't met me before, I'm 105 kilos, and I'm kind of concerned, right, that if I'm at the back of a motorcycle and the guy that's actually driving around is let's say 45 kilos or whatever, that's going to be a pretty difficult ask, right?
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Chuck. Especially you see with this ride hailing app, I'm guessing that it's going to be a very most people that are using it is going to be in an urban situation, in high traffic congestion areas. So the chances of you traveling at a very high speed is going to be low. So when you're carrying if you're carrying a chuck on board, at a very low speed, handling that bike actually takes a lot more skill and a lot more muscle, because you have somebody that's actually quite heavy behind you. So it's going to take a lot more effort to maneuver around cars, to maneuver around traffic. So if you don't have the experience, if you don't have the skill, yes, it's a point of concern for me. And you're absolutely right that it's going to be difficult for somebody who's not experienced.
I'm actually very curious, like in overseas, like bike riding apps, like bike hailing apps, do they actually require the passenger to put in their weight or their size?
I have actually used Gojek in Indonesia, but no, I've never had to key in my size. No.
Okay.
Oh, so you're absolutely right. And there are other concerns as well, especially as far as safety is concerned, helmet being one as well. I believe that insurance coverage is also very important in that sense.
So you've mentioned some of the concerns that you have, right? At the same time, Daegu Ride have also listed out some of the things that they are doing to help ensure the safety. We mentioned helmets earlier, insurance. They said masks and hair nets. So considering all these things, do you foresee the bike hailing services to be embraced by the public?
Not immediately, no. There's still going to be a lot of skepticism. Malaysians generally... Let's look at public transport. The people who use public transport are probably looking at saving time and saving some money. So in that essence, Daegu Ride is probably hitting the nail on the head because you're providing a cheap solution and you're providing an alternative to being stuck in traffic, which is great these days with the crazy traffic. But in terms of being immediately picked up by the public, no, I think it'll take some time before it actually becomes more popular.
Right. Okay, so you guys actually published an article this morning, as I understand it, about the cost variance, you know, of how much Daggerwhite is going to cost and all that, right? So, how much is the anticipated savings or difference between, you know, bike riding and car ride hailing, like what we have with Grab right now?
Okay, let's look at it this way, Chuck. If we, for example, an MRT station or an LRT station is probably a couple of kilometers away from your house or away from your office, maybe within a 3 to 7 to 8 kilometer radius. Right. So if you're gonna order a Grab, for example, that's probably, depending on time of day and how much in demand there is, it's probably gonna cost you anywhere between 10 to 20 ringgit. Mm. Daggerwhite is probably upfront they're charging you 3 ringgit. After that, 1 ringgit for every kilometer. That's great. That's actually I personally do think that it's a bit expensive actually. But in terms of alternative to Grab, I think it's much cheaper, and let's consider that this is probably the first or last mile option before you get on an MRT or whatever it is, public transport that you're going to get onto. So it's not going to be immediately picked up, and it is still a bit expensive, but I do expect the competition to pick up and cheaper prices to come.
So basically, you're expecting that people are only going to take this for like short distances, not like, you know, to KLIA or something, you know, on a bike.
No, definitely not. No. Where are you going to put your luggage, bro?
Oh, yeah, that's true.
So I just
unless they have bigger bikes like BMWs or something, that's good.
So I'm just wondering, right, because now we have food delivery services, bike hailing, and also regular riders on the road. Do you think we might face the issue of congestion, and how can we address this?
Congestion, not really, because you're not going to get, I don't expect there to be new riders that are just going to start riding just for the sake of being able to do this kind of work. But, you know, you're giving existing riders a chance to make money from their vehicle, from their mode of transport that they already have. Hmm. So in terms of congestion, I don't really think it's going to congest the roads a lot. When Grab was first introduced, you did have cases where even I had friends that went out and bought Myvis and Axias, and you know, just so that they could drive a Grab. So that did create some congestion. Do I think that it's going to, that same scenario is going to come up? No, I don't think people are going to go out there, start buying motorcycles just so they can, you know, deliver food or pick somebody up and send them somewhere. No, it's still going to be the same. My concern would be safety, in the sense that are people going to start riding faster? Are people going to, they're going to start beating traffic lights just so that they can get food delivered on time, or somebody delivered, or send somebody wherever they want to go right on time, you know?
Yeah, we actually see this already sometimes, like people like grab the delivery guys like speeding past and stuff like that, right?
Precisely, yeah, absolutely, you know? And yeah. You see this almost every day, not just once or twice a day. You see it quite often. So I believe that traffic offences are going to increase. Is the congestion going to increase? I doubt it, but traffic offences, definitely.
I think on a more broad term, like just with motorcycles in general, obviously, you know, there are more motorcycle accidents than car accidents on the road. What measures do you think that we can do in Malaysia to actually reduce this and to make motorcycle riding safer in general?
Well, there's actually quite a lot. If you go back to where people actually get their licensing from, we can actually completely overhaul that. Our licensing system is obsolete. You know, we should be able to teach people how to ride better, how to control a bike better. You know, we should also teach people how to ride during the nighttime in the dark. You know, what are the things that you need to look out for? So, in terms of licensing, I think that needs to be updated. Other than that, though, I think there needs to be stronger repercussions for beating the law. You know, so right now, what are the chances of you getting caught after you beat traffic lights? You know, there's absolutely zero chances of you getting caught. So, and what happens if you do actually get caught? Very little. Probably a summon. That's it. What's going to happen? You probably just take the summon, you keep your license, you keep your bike, things go on as they were.
Yeah, so I've actually been caught for jumping a red light before, and I did get a summon, and I did pay it. Yeah.
So, yeah, that's it. It ends there. There are no repercussions. There's no... people are not scared, basically, to beat the law.
So now that this has officially kicked off, right, in your opinion, what is an appropriate time frame for us to review and assess Daegu Ride's impact?
I think 6 to 8 months would be a good time frame. Like that would give people plenty of chance to, you know, give feedback. The people that have used the service before, that would be a good time frame for them to give their feedback based on their experiences. Other than that, though, how would we gauge whether it's successful or not? Maybe we will see an increase of people using MRT, an increase in people using LRT, because finally there's a solution to that final mile, you know, getting to that station. So you might see an increase in people using public transportation. If there is not, then I guess this solution to the final mile problem didn't really work out.
Okay, so on that, right, like you say there's hopefully more people take public transport. What other kind of metrics will we look at as to see whether Daegu Ride has been a success in Malaysia in that time frame or not?
Well, like I said, I think what would be a good metric would be whether or not there's an increase in people using public transportation.
Yep.
Right now, I live in an urban area, right? Let's use me as an example. I walk over to the MRT station. That's great. But I have friends that probably live about 3 to 5 kilometers away from an MRT station. They still have to drive all the way to the MRT station, you know, look for a parking lot, park your cars and get on an MRT and go wherever they want to go. But, you know, that takes time. Driving there, you still got to go through a couple of traffic lights. You still have to spend some time looking for a parking lot, pay for the parking lot. So it's going to be this final mile solution. You know, you call a ride hailing app to your home. Somebody comes, picks you up, sends you to the MRT station. I totally believe that there is a better chance of people using public transport if there is a good solution to the final mile problem.
Kenshi, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
My absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me.
That was Kenshi Dhillon, founder of BikesRepublic.com, taking us through the safety aspects of bike hailing services and other issues surrounding it as well. So while we're on this subject, one of the other things that Minister Syed Saddiq has been talking about is how the introduction of motorcycle hailing will help provide jobs to young people. And we're going to be exploring that in further detail after the news. So stay tuned on the Evening Edition. This is BFM 89.9.
Boleh for Malaysia. Ha. BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's the Evening Edition with Ayman and Chuck, and we've been talking about bike sharing services, right, and the safety aspects of it. But there's also another part of it that we are going to look at, which is the opportunity to provide jobs. And that is one of the benefits that has been touted by the Youth and Sports Minister, Syed Saddiq Syed Abdul Rahman. And to take us through these kind of aspects of bike hailing services, we have on the line Adli Amirullah, Coordinator of the Economic and Business Unit at the Institute for Democracy and Economic Affairs, or IDEAS. Adli, thank you so much for joining us this evening. So, YB Syed Saddiq, the Youth and Sports Minister, said that Daegu Ride is expected to offer 5,000 job opportunities for youths. What are your thoughts about this avenue of job creation?
In principle, the motorcycling ride-sharing is actually a good thing because it provides more choices for the consumer. But if the main objective of allowing motorcycling ride sharing is for creating employment for the B40, I am not really in favor of that because it does not tackle the real structural problem of B40 unemployment or underemployment in Malaysia. Well, it may create the numbers that have been projected by the government, but the big question is, are we going to let all these B40 to continue to work as the riders of motorcycling e-hailing for the rest of their life? Are we not creating a better education, a better opportunity for them to move out from the poverty trap that can make their living much more better? So that's the bigger question that I will pose to this policy ahead.
All right, so on that thought, so how can we actually help these youths who actually do maybe start out as riders to move up the value chain and maybe get, you know, proper full-time employment?
So this is actually can be looked into the best example of today, which is the car ride e-hailing platform. We can see almost a lot of e-hailing drivers previously was a part-time, where they are in the transitioning of changing jobs, or maybe they are making an additional income for their family to survive in these cities of Kuala Lumpur. But then to look into a deeper solution of how can the government help to transition all this group of people before the moving out and not totally dependent on the e-hailing platform. This has actually come back to the real question of giving a better education for their next generation of kids and a more accessible opportunity and equal opportunity for all B40 workers in Malaysia.
Are there potential benefits and pitfalls of having employment for the young people being so closely tied to the gig economy?
Yeah, so I can see that the arrival of digital economy or gig economy or platform economy is actually can be worrying for some sector of job, because we can know that robots is taking over, AI is taking over. But we also have to remember that whenever there is an industrial revolution happening, when one job is losing, there will be a new job creating in another sector. For example, if previously when the digital camera come into places, for example, so people are not buying film anymore at that time. So what happened is a new sector of digital camera is being created, it's being promoted, but then the other sector of film is dying. So people losing job there, but it's gaining job in other sector. So it's happening now, or where the platform economy come into pictures, where some people is losing job, but some people also gaining job. It is also a way forward for the next generation to look into a possible workforce or work a labor force to join in this digital era. But then the one thing that we need to understand that as a human being, we need to distinguish ourselves with the machineries, and what are the things that actually can distinguish ourselves is innovation, is the creativity that we have now. So the next generation might be dependent on the digital platform, but they also is in dire need of a better creativity and innovation when they come into workforce in the next 20 to 30 years.
Right. So if we take the long view, right, how does this gig economy actually impact our national economy and growth over the next couple of years?
In the long term, I would say it will help our economy to move even faster, even smoother. But it is also depends on how well our infrastructure is adapting with the rapid changes of the digital economy in this global era. For example, if we are expecting our youth to actually work in a digital platform, for example, offering a services like coding, for example, coding in software or coding in computer engineering to client abroad in United States, for example. But if your internet, your infrastructure such as internet speed is not up to date, then how can a youth that has expertise and skills to provide those services and export to other countries if the internet is not good enough? And even if we can say that in our main cities, the internet is okay, it's doing okay, but what is there a possible to give a fair opportunity to the rural population to actually provide those services as well? So that is the bigger question of having the right infrastructures in the country to actually complement with the rapid changes in the digital economy to actually gain the advantage from it.
And how can workers within the gig economy account for the lack of a social safety net?
So the bigger problem in Malaysia about social safety net is we do not have a strong worker union in Malaysia, historically speaking. Like, for example, if you look into Germany, their worker union is so strong that they can even prevent Uber to operate in the country. So in Malaysia, we are lacking of that. So I am proposing that in Malaysia, we should have a platform for the workers to have a proper union. They actually can protect their whenever all these digital platforms come into Malaysia to provide services. Because at the end of the day, the platform is just a medium, but the one that enabling those medium is the providers, which are the drivers or the riders.
Adli, thanks so much for speaking with us this evening. That was Adli Amirullah, coordinator of the Economic and Business Unit at IDEAS, speaking with us about bike hailing services and their impact on youth unemployment. So if you have any thoughts on this, you can call us at 7733 2900, WhatsApp 0187898899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. So keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, the business station.